Welcome to Glow and Tell, a podcast about all things beauty, wellness, and business, sponsored by Artemis, the brand empowering the unsung heroes of beauty and wellness.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Glow and Tell. Today, we are joined again by Simon Mansell, founder of Artemis, who has recently also started a new business called Fiber Skincare. Simon, thank you so much for being back on the podcast with us, and we are so excited to talk to you today about identifying the right beauty technology for your business.
Thanks, Lenny. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, absolutely. And great to see you as well. So really what I wanted to talk about today and something that I think is just a really apt topic at the moment for those running beauty and wellness businesses is the integration of technology into those businesses. Obviously on the market at the moment, we are fully saturated with so many amazing innovative technologies that can really be brought into not only increase ticket prices of what we're able to offer to our clientele, but also just diversify what we are able to provide in terms of services. So I know that you have done a lot of work on this, both within Artemis and outside of Artemis as a beauty and wellness business owner yourself. And how I really wanted to structure the episode is really talking about the who, what, when, where, and why of beauty technology. So starting off on the why, I wanted to know from your perspective, why do you think it's a good idea to leverage beauty technology as a beauty and wellness business?
So I think that I suppose my position on business is the purpose of a business is to make money. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, kind of the framework that I think about things. But it is also nice to have a slightly broader purpose. So you feel like you're doing something that's really helping your customers and the, you know, the ecosystem that you build around a business. So they're the two lenses through which I view business, which obviously just, you know, I think it's important to give some context. So in terms of the making money side, as with any technology, whenever you introduce technology into a business, which is, you know, some sort of new innovation, it generally means that you can earn more without doing as much work. Mm-hmm. You know, so any technology generally is some sort of automation, some sort of thing which improves results, which is better than using your bare hands. And so the first thing on the money-making side is that if you pick the right products that, you know, people are willing to pay for, you probably can earn more, you know, and I usually equate this for, you know, Artemis customers back to like how much they can earn per hour. So The estimate is that you will earn significantly more per hour if you deploy technology in your business than if you don't. And I think that's sort of fairly common sense. So that's like from the money perspective, why I would say bringing technology in is important. From the like broader purpose perspective, you know, where you want to provide a great service and like, you know, improve people's lives. Obviously, if you bring in technology that is doing stuff that your, you know, hands can't do, then you're, you know, going to deliver better results for your clients. So it's really about maximizing the results that you can deliver for your clients through technology, helps them feel better, more confident, you know, gives you like, you know, a nice purpose for your business. So I'd say they're the two lenses that I would see it through.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those business owners that, you know, potentially, you know, I think we have to kind of talk about it through two separate perspectives, because we'll be having listeners who are business owners who are already leveraging some beauty technology or some wellness technology. And then we'll have others that are not quite yet dipping their toes in, but are really curious and interested about it. So when would you say is the right time to bring in this type of technology? And how would you identify which technology is going to be the most impactful for you to bring into your individual business?
So in terms of the when, I would say obviously there is usually some sort of financial, you know, expenditure involved both in bringing in technology and selling it. So you have to be thinking about like your financial position, like what can you afford to do. It's always good to start with what your customers actually want as well. So like What are the services that your customers want? You shouldn't bring in technology just because it's like exciting to have something new. It should be some sort of customer insight come from talking to your customers or potential customers about what their needs are and what could help fill those needs in the best way possible. So I think it's having a need, you know, making sure that your customers need something that you're thinking of bringing in, and then also having the financial resources both to buy the equipment, pay for the consumables, you know, do the marketing, you know, really do your numbers to make sure that you're not stretching yourself, so making your life difficult or not able to like fulfill the promise of something that you might bring in. What you actually end up bringing in relates back to the customer insight. So, mm-hmm. you know, what do your customers want from you? You know, are you more of a facial focused business? Are you doing body as well? Or are you more focused on body? You can normally break down what people want into some sort of pretty clear categories. So for body, for example, when I have been researching devices, you know, I'm breaking it down into body sculpting, number one, muscle tone, skin laxity, the appearance of cellulite, and then stretch marks would be like the main categories in terms of body. Because I felt like they're the five big areas that if you talk to most women, especially, that they want, and obviously, you know, a lot of men now too. So it's really starting with what are the customer needs. You can do that by asking people, also just by doing research and like thinking through it yourself and trying to categorize, okay, what are the big areas of the face or body that I could help my customers improve? And then, you know, what are the services or devices that do the best job at improving those things?
Absolutely. And, you know, to your last point, what are the services or devices that do the best at providing those things? Obviously, for every category, we've got, you know, hundreds of devices. You know, we can nail that down to probably a handful of high quality devices, but that are touting these benefits, that being the solution to these types of, you know, issues or concerns that clients have. How do you narrow that down in terms of your research process when you're looking at devices? You know, what are the important factors to you when you're vetting devices to try to determine what the best solution is that you're going to bring into the business?
So I suppose I go through a process when I'm researching devices. The process that I would go through is I read the science. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a doctor, but, you know, I have like some basic science understanding. So I like, how legit is the science that they're doing? And I will, you know, I'll be Googling, I'll be like ChatGPTing, like, you know, right. I'm just like validating, is this, you know, if I go on PubMed is where there's a lot of research documents hosted. So if I'm looking for, you know, low level lasers effect on fat loss, I'm looking for the number of studies there are, how many times those studies have been cited, you know, to give me like an early read. Then I will also be like watching videos on YouTube. There's usually some expert on there who has, you know, a few hundred thousand views who I can listen to what he said or she said about that particular technology. I look at the source, you know, if that person works at a low level laser, you know, manufacturer, then I'm a bit more suspicious of the source than like someone else. But, you know, I'm sort of trying to triangulate like what I would say is desk research. Mm-hmm. Then I'm, you know, if I'm finding companies who offer those solutions, I'm looking at their clinical data. I'm usually, you know, I'm obviously in an unfortunate position where manufacturers will want to talk to me because, you know, we obviously distribute devices to quite a lot of locations. So I get to normally talk to the founders, the original inventors. Then I have a advisory board, and some of them I'm paying and some of them I'm not. And I've sort of got that in the different areas of my life where I have people who are experts in this, you know, so we've got a medical officer who, you know, I'll ask his opinion. There's some like, you know, smarter friends I've got who are in the industry. I'll say, what do you think of this? You know, so it's like trying to get other opinions. Obviously some of the mm-hmm. management at Artemis also give me like opinions. So it's like this sort of triangulation. Then I'm actually usually trying the device myself. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I send my wife if I think it's a little bit dangerous. I don't like burn my face off. She's always up for, you know, volunteering. And then, you know, sometimes I ask her the friends if they'd be willing. I obviously pay for the sessions, you know, and mm-hmm. when they're there, they're having the treatment. They tell me how it feels. I get them to ask the person who's got that type of device, you know, does it work? What do the clients say? What are the negatives? You know, that's kind of like more like early first person research. Then, you know, sometimes we'll get to the point where we'll be ordering a device and we're testing it at one of our like training locations, people, you know, on our team will start looking at the devices, you know, which is obviously something that you could replicate as a, you know, location, you know, some of these things. And then we're normally putting it in some locations first, seeing like, does the results actually back up what we thought was going to happen? Are people getting sales as a result of it? So it's a pretty lengthy process that goes through from like desk research, talking to people, expertise, trying it yourself, getting other people to try it, like kind of a fairly first principles type approach to how you would try something new. But that's the, you know, the sort of method that I've used for finding things, which I think a lot of that as a practitioner or as a business owner, you could replicate yourself. And maybe if you weren't sitting at the front in science class, then there might be someone else who you know who does, or you could, you know, obviously rely on companies who are sort of doing some of that process for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you touch on so many really important points here that I think we can also boil down for those that are listening that, you know, are not distributors that are looking to bring in these sort of isolated technologies to their own businesses, which is number one, always just doing your research, just that kind of bare minimum, making sure that you're reading through clinicals, that you're digging into testimonials, that you're taking a look at the information that is already out there at your fingertips. I love that you also highlighted using your sort of trusted advisor board of people that just know more than you in different areas. I think that's something that's so important for everyone to have and for everyone to really leverage. Also just getting your team involved and saying, hey, you know, do you think this is something that our client base would want, be excited about? And also, is this something that you would be excited about selling and you would be excited about learning and adding to your roster as far as the services that you provide? Because at the end of the day, your team is going to be on the front line and really be, you know, selling the service. So I think that's hugely important as well. And also just identifying, you know, when you're looking at these potential devices to bring in, treatments to bring in. I love what you also said about, you know, making sure that you're trying them first if you can. You know, most of the time you're going to be getting devices that are already somewhere in the US and likely are somewhere in your area within a reasonable distance. So, you know, sending people to go get these treatments or receiving them yourself, I think is such an important piece as well, because then you can also get, you know, the good tea. You can really kind of get the tea from the practitioner, from the manager. You know, most of the time people will be open to speaking to you about it if you just approach it from that just very sort of honest, transparent, you know, perspective of saying, hey, I'm looking to potentially bring this in. You know, what do you think about it? You know, what are its pitfalls? How is the support from, you know, the manufacturer, the distributor? So kind of on that note around support and, you know, looking at who you're going to be working with and partnering with when you bring on a new device, what are the things that you think that business owners should be looking for in potential partnerships when they are seeking to purchase or lease devices?
Yes, it's a good question. So, I mean, I do try and start with the data where I can, kind of a bit like what I was saying with the clinical data. So, you know, common question I'll ask is, what is the fault rate? Right, what is the annual fault rate? What percentage of these need to be fixed per year? Most manufacturers or distributors, they might not know that immediately, but they can probably get that number for you. You know, and if that is single digit percentages, then it's not too bad. You know, obviously they might lie about the number, so it's just in one data point, but it's just trying to understand, okay, what is the fault rate? Then it's like, okay, where you get faults, what are the common faults? And they will usually be around areas where there's some sort of moving part. You know, so if there is some area where like fluid can get stuck or like that kind of stuff, that tends to be more likely where there's like going to be some sort of error, you know, problem. Understanding the warranty situation. So like, what warranty do you have? How long is that warranty? Obviously taking some references on the manufacturer or distributor that you're thinking of working with in terms of what their support's like. There's normally some groups within, you know, Facebook, etc., you can find. I would say that, you know, in those groups tends to be the most moany people moaning, so I wouldn't take everything that's in a group as like gospel, but it's like you can get a bit of a read on what that company's like. I will sometimes also, it doesn't always work, but depending on the company, I will look on some of these like employee review websites, where people write reviews on like Glassdoor on what the company's like to work for. If everyone hates working at the company, then it's kind of a bit of an indication sometimes that that's not always like the best company to work with. So again, it's kind of doing your research, you know, Facebook groups, talking to them, collecting data, you know, looking, you know, often actually on Reddit, I find, I was doing some research the other day on HydraFacial, and I found like a whole group in there talking about HydraFacial and like why they liked it, why they didn't like it. Like it was really insightful information because it was actual practitioners talking to each other. So, you know, a mixture of, you know, desk research again, Googling, like Facebook groups, like talking to people, talking to the manufacturer, collecting the data. You know, sometimes I'll ask the same question to a couple of different people within a company and see whether I get a similar answer. Because at some, you can sometimes like identify where they're like basically not telling, you know, the 100% truth. And then, yeah, as we mentioned before, like you are going and meeting with a practitioners who have the device already, asking them like, what issues have you had? What reliabilities have you had? Like, is there issues with the consumables? Like, where are the problems? You're looking for, you know, you're looking for what the issues are. It's always exciting, I think about bringing on a new product. So you almost, if you're excited type of person like that, you might want to temper your enthusiasm by trying to identify all the negatives and then seeing if any of those negatives are like deal killers for you or whether you think they're, you know, they're worth the risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you raise a few really good points here. Definitely as well, one thing that I want to add is that when you are seeking out a beauty device of any kind, just taking a look at, you know, what is the manufacturer distributor going to offer you as far as value, because you really want to be considering return on investment and not, you know, of course, ROI in terms of what you're going to be able to generate with the device, but also in terms of lifetime support. You know, what does that look like? What are you going to be able to generate from the relationship? How is the manufacturer distributor going to be supporting you throughout? To your point on warranties, that's extremely important, but also in community, you know, especially if you're going to be able to be a part of a community that's going to then provide value for you, for your team, you know, that's something to also consider. And just making sure that you also feel that, you know, you can build a relationship built on trust and transparency with the manufacturer, the distributor that you're working with, I think is really important. And you've, you know, already listed quite a few points on that in terms of being healthily discerning, I think, and being sovereign as far as taking a look at testimonials, but also, you know, doing your own due diligence on that particular point. So pivoting just a little bit, I am curious to talk about, because you have mentioned fat loss a couple of times, and you know, I think that this is a super hot topic right now in the industry, just given the absolute exponential rise of Ozempic and how that is now competitive with the beauty technologies that we've seen on the market for this. So I wanted to ask you on that and kind of what your viewpoint is, if you're seeing that technology is actually shifting away from this fat loss and instead moving into complementary treatments and technologies that can work with a fat loss program. I don't know if you have an answer to that, but it's definitely a really interesting one to talk about.
Definitely, yeah. So I think my opinion is that you know, semaglutides, of which Ozempic is the one, you know, the brand name of one of those products, which, you know, basically help your body. Well, you feel less hungry, and it also, as I understand it, helps your body process you know, your food in a different way. So it leads to very dramatic weight loss. I think a lot of our, you know, clients maybe aren't fully aware of this yet, but I think it's like, just because you're not maybe aware of it, it is your competitor if you're in any sort of, you know, body contouring area. And I don't think it's easy to compete with from a pure fat loss point of view. You know, like, because it is so effective. I think though that where there is an opportunity is that, if you know, Google some of the like after effects of Ozempic semaglutide, you know, it can make your face feel quite hollowed out. Someone was telling me it's a similar thing on the butt the other day. I haven't been fortunate enough to see any of those butt images, but you know, that kind of like lack of volume, like taking the air out of a balloon a bit too quickly. So I think there is an opportunity for treatments and devices which help to, you know, build collagen, you know, support that fat loss. But I definitely think that you should be thinking about in your marketing how you can complement something like semaglutide, Ozempic, you know, rather than directly competing with them. It doesn't mean that some people who just have a little bit of extra, you know, somewhere, it's still more appropriate for them to have a med spa, you know, or, you know, esthetician type treatment. But I do think, you know, not being aware of this sort of trend, especially as like, you know, you can get access to semaglutides for, you know, $1,000, I think a little bit more than that a month. It's not that far off what you would pay at a med spa. So it is something that customers will be replacing med spa treatments for.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that in mind, you know, what are you really seeing as being kind of the cutting edge of beauty technology at the moment? You know, I know we've kind of seen this across the past sort of 7 years that we've been in the market, that the market is moving very quickly always. And there are treatments that are coming in that are feeling very new and cutting edge. And then there are some types of treatments that have, you know, been around, are tried and true. And of course, we can continue to iterate on those and see new devices doing, you know, old things in a new way. But what would you say from your research is really on the cutting edge right now in terms of beauty technology?
Well, I think one interesting way to think about it is just from a like category point of view, there's kind of two business models, right? There's bundling and there's unbundling. And bundling is where you combine multiple, say, hand pieces that then when combined together get a much stronger result. So I think that's one trend. There is some devices where maybe they've got four hand pieces. Each of those hand pieces isn't like completely new, but actually it's the combination effect of those four is creating a much better result. And then with unbundling, you maybe have a feature of another device that someone's taken out and made much better, but it's just by itself. And that's maybe a lower priced device because it's just got one feature, but it's doing something very well in one area. So they're like two trends to look out for, and not saying that either of them is wrong. Bundling can actually be very efficient. You create these like super systems where they can do a lot of stuff. And then unbundling, you maybe can get the device for a lower price point and it's a more focused, it's best at one specific thing. In terms of stuff that I have seen that I am excited about, I am excited about the general sort of plasma area. Mm-hmm. You know, there is some like, I think, FDA work to figure out what the right classification should be for some of these products, because some of them I think are very safe. But you know, plasma can be like something that can really be quite ablative and something that can actually be like not ablative at all. So just, you know, figuring out the right regulatory pathway for that stuff. But you can see very good results both for acne, for you know, stimulating growth hormones or like growth factors, sorry, within the skin. So that, you know, I think that's one very interesting area. I think there's some like combination devices specifically for cellulite, which include technologies like RF that have been used a long time, but combine it with some of the other, you know, more massage like modalities, which, you know, when combined, I think can get very strong results. Yeah. In terms of body shaping or sculpting, I do personally think that cold temperature is still the best, although I have seen some more heat-based treatments which create a good result overall because they also improve the sort of skin tone and texture. There is some gases that I probably won't talk too much about right now, but like that are showing very good results for, again, tone and texture of skin. I do think actually like the M-Sculpt type devices are probably the best for muscle tone. So the main ones being M-Sculpt and Cool Tone, I believe. Those guys have pretty good like patent arrangements between them. So there's, you know, there is other like devices out there, but those are probably the main two. I think that there's EMS, so electric sort of stimulation, and then there is these Tesla-based magnets, which I just think are stronger and deeper. And so I feel like they're probably some of the best devices for muscle tone. I think there's like opportunity and stretch marks is not really a good device in that area. But there's a lot of amazing inventors all over the world who are inventing technologies, combining different technologies. One little sneaky area to look as a tip would be anything that's doing things in like wound healing, because they tend to go medical wound healing stuff first. And then if it's healing a wound, like a diabetic ulcer, for example, then it can definitely help with, other more like normal skin conditions, like or improving the skin tone and texture. So there's different areas to look. It is a little bit like a treasure hunt though, because there is like thousands of things which are just either complete copies, don't have any clinical evidence. Like, you know, there's a lot of like stuff there that I wouldn't trust. So I think if I was running a beauty location, I would really be looking for companies that I trust, companies that I know, okay, these guys, when they tell me something's good, it's good.
Right.
Because there's so much work involved in actually finding the good stuff. I'd be willing to pay that company some money in the middle for helping me find this like great technologies, because there's just so much work involved. And obviously, if I'm running a beauty location, I've got so much other stuff to do. I don't have all day to sit around doing all this stuff that I'm explaining that you should do. So
no, 100%. I think that it actually raises this really amazing point as well, which is, again, this trusted advisor piece where, you know, for example, and you might laugh because I talk about this brand all the time, but with Glossier, I know that anytime that they release any product that I am going to love it, because they have created that trusted advisor, that love mark status with me, where I am such a brand loyalist to them that I will purchase everything that they roll out. It's just a given for me because I just trust in the quality. I trust what they're rolling out to me and I love it. And I am definitely part of that kind of target consumer persona for them. And I think that, you know, it is one of those things where you do really want to find a manufacturer or distributor that has that suite of solutions and that you trust that when they're bringing on new devices, that they have given their stamp of approval and that stamp of approval means something to you, given that you have that trust that's bedded in. I also do love what you said about plasma. I completely agree. I think that particularly cold temperature plasma being the less sort of the lower risk profile of the plasmas, it's such a fantastic, innovative technology that I really can't wait to see more of on the US market. You know, it's very, very big in Asia at the minute, but the results from that are just absolutely incredible. And to your point, yeah, I do think that, you know, we are seeing a lot of these bundled devices as well as unbundled devices. I think another note that I would just make on that for business owners that are listening is just in your considerations, also considering your sort of footprint in your actual space. If you are a single esthetician practice, potentially going from one of these bundled devices is actually going to be a better option for you potentially, because you're getting more in a smaller footprint. Whereas, you know, you also might want to go for an unbundled device in the event that you have a lower budget for what you're looking to bring in and it fits better for your audience. So there are so many considerations here, but I think that, you know, we've definitely outlined a couple of great tips to that end.
Yeah,
as
I think
well.
On that point, it's interesting. I was looking at, you know, doing some research on HydraFacial, as I mentioned, and, you know, I think it's a great product. And it's, you know, my basic conclusion is, number one, it's a brand, right? People will go and ask for a HydraFacial treatment. So you will get some customers just by having a HydraFacial, which is awesome.
Right.
It also is like very good for the entry level esthetician, because it has, you know, the step-by-step of the facial, you know, sort of like the extractions and the like, you know, vortex, which is, you know, helping, you know, infuse serums into the skin. It sort of has it in one thing. So maybe it's less, you know, appropriate for a more like advanced esthetician, but somebody just starting out in business, it guides you through what to do. And it's a brand where people recognize it. So like, that's an example where that product, even though I think it's slightly more basic than some of the other things that you could get, there's real big advantages for that. And it's like, I think it's also being clear of like, what is your objective, right? If your objective is I need to drive more foot traffic into my business, then you might want something which has a bit of a brand to it. Whereas if you've got traffic, but maybe you want to monetize that more effectively, then maybe it's like a different type of device. So it's also like thinking about what your customers need, but also what your business objectives are, because then that can help you like frame what you're going to bring in based on those objectives.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, you know, obviously a lot to consider when you're thinking about bringing beauty technology into your location, but also so many potential benefits, and it can really just skyrocket your business. So definitely something to consider, particularly in the beauty and wellness space. We are seeing technology coming into the space more and more with big brands like Hydrafacial, Therabody as well, with both back bar and retail options. You know, we're just seeing the leveraging of technology for these beauty and wellness benefits. And it's just a really incredible time to be in the business and really be leveraging that. So once a business brings in a piece of beauty or wellness technology, how would you recommend that they successfully launch that technology? What does that preparation period look like? How can they really make the most of that launch to their customer base? And of course, it's going to vary a little bit to your point, depending on what kind of business they are, you know, who their customers are, but what would you really give as a set of tips to successfully launch new technology in your business?
Okay, so I think the first thing is obviously understanding the product yourself, you know, what it does, how it does it, what are the clinical data. You know, it might be good to actually, I find always best to write things down, you know, write out the document for yourself on like, what is the short explanation of this? If someone wants a bit more detail, what's the explanation? Almost like a script. Not that you ever read the script, but it just, you know, gets your thoughts down. So you need to understand it first. Then you need to train your staff on understanding it. And that includes them experiencing the treatment themselves. Because, you know, if they're really bought into the treatment, then they're going to sell it way better. And then checking that they can explain it. And don't just ask them, can you explain it? Like, get them to explain it to you. And then the first time probably won't be good. And you explain it to them. You know, you get their feedback. Maybe your explanation isn't that good. And this is especially important for reception staff, people who are doing other treatments where they can say, oh, we've got this new thing and this is what it does. And like, that is a nice, crisp kind of explanation. So that, you know, that's the first thing. The second thing is I think that, you know, getting some of your top customers in and doing some sort of like launch day where you maybe get the top 20 customers in and you give them a special deal. You let them experience maybe one free session and then give them a discount for a package. Maybe in return, they could allow you to take some before and afters. Obviously, you can always exclude their face if they don't feel, if they feel shy. But, you know, then you get some like initial customers. You get some before and after collateral because people always believe more like local before and after pictures rather than, you know, the manufacturer's before and afters. So that would be kind of a good next phase. Then it's also like trying to identify influential people in your community. If you read this book, The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, it talks about how trends get started. And it's actually, you know, they're actually started by small numbers of influential people who start telling a lot of people about something. So trying to identify who are those people in your community, you know, is it the yoga teacher? Is it like the popular mom at the private school? You know, is it the local radio DJ? Like, how can you get to those influencers? Because getting to one of them and maybe giving them some free sessions in order to talk about it can be, can have like a big multiplier effect. Then I also suggest doing social media, obviously just organic posting on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, but also running some paid media in your local area, maybe with some sort of, you know, promotional offer. Facebook specifically don't like before and after pictures, so you have to get a bit creative about how to promote the services, but I definitely think that they can be very effective ways of doing it. There's also other strategies, like you could create an email newsletter and maybe don't just promote yourself the whole time. And this is the same actually on your organic social, you know, add value, you know, educate people, provide them with either, you either really need to entertain or educate them with your social media posts and your email newsletters. And at the bottom, you can say, by the way, we have a special offer on this new product, or by the way, we're doing this launch day, or we have this, you know, Mother's Day cheese and wine evening, like we'd love you to come in and try some of our products. You know, you can promote something, but most of your communication, especially through things like email and social, should be about sort of adding value. collecting email addresses can be good, you know, using a competition or something so that you're building up that newsletter list. You know, so they're just some of the tips that I would suggest. It's really like getting your messaging right, getting everyone internally within the company practicing it, doing a launch day, organic social email newsletters, and then paying to promote some stuff, specifically usually on, you know, Meta, which is Facebook and Instagram. They would be some of the sort of starting strategies that I would do. You know, anything to stimulate word of mouth is good. So, you know, you want to be less concerned about making money to start with and more concerned about how can you get this like message out to market. One thing that I have found particularly useful is if a device has some sort of immediate effect. So if there's like some sort of like inch loss or some, you know, something that the device is doing instantly, and, you know, never like lie about why that is. You know, if it's, for example, a cold temperature device and you're getting some inch loss because of the cold temperature retraction, you can say that, but it's like people just like to have something immediate and some like little story that they can go and tell other people. And that's kind of like part of the stimulating the word of mouth. You know, word of mouth is the most powerful form of like marketing, and like anything you can do to stimulate that is good.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, creating those Instagrammable moments, as you would call them. I mean, maybe TikTok moments now. I'm still not quite bought into TikTok, although I probably should be. But, you know, HydraFacial has that as well, where you get to have, you know, your gunge, essentially, from your face that you see after extractions, right? So that's kind of that Instagrammable moment. I know there's a lot of other amazing Instagrammable moments from certain devices. M-Sculpt certainly is a cool one, just given that kind of muscle building and the way in which it's applied to enhance the muscle tone, as you mentioned previously. So let's say now that, you know, for example, a business has had a successful launch, you know, things have gone really well. They really did kind of invest in that long-term vision in the sense that they were really focused on getting in influencers, getting their team bought in. And they've had the device for a while, and let's say that they've just gotten a little bit stagnant with it and things are slowing down. It's not really seasonality driven. It's more that, you know, things are just feeling a little bit stale. What would you say are some good sort of practical tips that they could use to reinvigorate a device that may have just gotten a little bit stale in their location?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that is an issue, right? You sort of get this initial burst when everyone's into it. So it can, you know, that can be challenging. You know, some other ideas, right? You could, again, think about like influential people who is going to come in, maybe somebody who, you know, you give away free treatments, but they agree to create some content with you that creates some buzz. You can think about events around specific, you know, times, you know, whether that's Mother's Day or Father's Day, etc. You can also think about partnerships with other relevant local businesses. So you could take the device to the local yoga studio and do treatments there. And then maybe the yoga, you know, you could have some of the like yoga type event at your location. You know, there's other things you can do to try and create some sort of community feel within your business. If people feel like it's a community, it can be a big thing. I know that some businesses have done things like run clubs where, you know, groups of their customers are meeting up at a certain time. Nothing to do with like the business, but it's like you're creating this like little community around the business. You know, different advertising campaigns. You know, if you think about big companies, they have the same products a lot of the time for a long time, but they'll come up with some like different way of messaging it, or some, you know, some sort of something funny, or some sort of story about, you know, you or somebody who's working there, or like something else that you can film that's interesting. So yeah, it's just trying to, I suppose, recapture people's attention. You could also like stay up to date with the device, right? There might be new modalities, new topical stuff that goes with the device. Like talk to your reps who you're working with at the manufacturers or distributors about, you know, what the opportunities are, and ask them like what you know, the most successful locations, what are they doing that makes them successful. So I think yes, it's a constant challenge, but like, you know, working out what else you can do with the product, other creative ways to promote it, whether you could combine it with another product and come up with some sort of like promotional offer. You know, there's kind of different interesting ways of doing that, but it's always like hard work, to be honest. It's like constantly thinking about how you're going to like improve the product and improve the marketing.
Yeah, I think it's part of this sort of product life cycle that I see it as, is when we bring in a product and we go into launch phase, we sometimes just forget that then there are more phases that follow the launch phase, right? So it's not that it's going to launch, it's going to go up and keep going up naturally. We really do need to make sure that we are putting in constant effort, and that after launch, we go right back into innovation, to your point, that we start to continue to look at ways that we can innovate how we are offering this particular product, service, device at our locations. The few things I would add to what you've said, which I think are fantastic and very practical tools to leverage, are making sure that your staff is really constantly engaged, because your staff, again, I've mentioned it before, they are the front lines. If they are not excited about the product or device, your customers will not be excited about it, because they will not be positioning it to them. Additionally, just making sure that you are always looking for opportunities to create a bespoke experience that is unique to your particular location. Not only is that going to bring people in the door and keep them there as lifetime customers, but you're also going to be able to your point, continue to customize, develop these new complementary protocols, and just keep people really excited and engaged with your particular way of doing or offering a certain treatment. As we know, for example, from the HydraFacial example, you know, there are thousands of HydraFacial locations, but when people go to a particular business or practitioner, they're going there for HydraFacial at that business. And so there are ways to differentiate yourself, as long as you just put in the effort to do so and make sure that you have your team on board with that as well.
Definitely.
So Simon, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners on this topic before I ask you a last question? You've already answered our normal last question, so I'm going to throw a curveball at you for this one. But anything else that you want to share on the topic of identifying the right beauty technology for your business?
I don't think so. I mean, I think maybe like looking for stuff where, you know, obviously something like HydraFacial has a brand, right? So I'm saying that is probably, you know, a lot of the time a great ad. But like, if you can have this like slightly more innovative style where you're bringing in stuff that is like pretty new to the market, as long as, you know, you're confident in like that it's safe and effective. And then you start to build this reputation as like this innovative place, which is doing this new stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like you want to be like the South Korea, you know, where it's like, that's where the new things are happening.
Right.
And so that's, I think that can be a good strategy, because then it's like, as a retailer, you know, really as a retailer, anyone can have all of your treatments. But if you're mm-hmm. always like a little bit ahead of the game in terms of innovation, then mm-hmm. people start to think, okay, these are the guys who bring things out first. And that can be a good sort of attitude to have, as long as it's, you know, within your budget and all that kind of stuff, you know, makes sense, as you're not launching too many things at once. But I think that is also like a good position to be in. It's also more fun, right? If you're bringing out new things and you're explaining new science to people and stuff, it's like, it's just more interesting than explaining the same boring stuff that everyone's got.
100%. And I love that you stated that, actually, because I do think that that is a pitfall that I have seen, you know, businesses fall into, where, you know, you become very married to the established brands, but then, to your point, it is kind of the same old, you know, thing. And it's great. There are pros to that 100%. But if you can establish a reputation, at, to your point, as being the person who brings on the cutting edge, who's always got, you know, the newest, the latest and greatest that actually works and that people trust, you're also building your trusted advisor position. You're also, you know, kind of, to your point, yet you're developing into the go-to for the latest and greatest, which within the beauty tech space, within the tech space in general, is a really great reputation to have. So I love that you raised that, because I do think that that is a potential question that might come out of, you know, this particular episode. So the last question I'm going to ask you is going to be a total curveball for you. But right. You know, I'm sure one that you will probably have an answer to regardless. What are, in your view, the top three most impactful things that a business owner could do for their business right now?
Wow, put me on the spot.
I knew I had to think of a good one for you.
Helpful things that people can do for their business nonstop. Okay. So I think number one is product, mm-hmm. which is what you're offering what the market wants, mm-hmm. and is it differentiated? So really reviewing each of the services that you offer, is it a really killer proposition for what it's trying to do? Is it differentiated from what they can get next door or down the street, you know, in some way? So I'd always start there. Is the product solid? Then I would move on to, you know, sales distribution, which is, you know, I think what you said earlier, Delaney, is really important. Like, are your staff able to explain every product you have, what is good about it, what it does, how it works? You know, internally, like, have they all tried every product? Like, have you done the sort of basics of that? And then, you know, are you doing like events? Are you doing partnerships? Are you doing some advertising to bring in customers? You know, they're all like sales related activities. And then I think the sort of third area is like the branding, like, which, you know, is obviously how your business looks, but it's also like how it feels inside. You know, is it a nice place for people to come? Is it somewhere that you would want to come and relax? Do your staff have a certain, like, you know, if you want your brand to be friendly, are they friendly? Or if you want it to be knowledgeable, are they knowledgeable? Like, how all those, a brand is really everything, the way that you act and behave. It's like your reputation. So it's all these little details, as well as like the visual identity and all that kind of stuff. But I think the reason I do it in that order is if you don't have a good product, it's like nothing else matters. And then if you don't sell any of the product, it's sort of like nothing else matters. And then really brand is what really takes you to the next level, and where you can maybe like open another location with that same vibe. And then that becomes like a real moat for the business, as in like it's not easy for someone else to copy, because a brand is based on like authentically who you are and who the business is. And that's not easy to replicate. So if you put me on the spot, they're my 1, 2, 3. It's product, sales, branding.
That was fantastic. Really impressed that you came up with that so quickly. You just had it locked and loaded. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Simon, for joining us again. I think this will be a fantastic episode for our listeners, and certainly very topical given just where we're going with beauty technology. Thank you so much to our listeners, and we will see you back here next time for another episode of Glow & Tell. Thanks so much, Simon.
Thanks, Delaney. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Glow & Tell. Please like, subscribe, comment, and follow anywhere where you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next time. Perfect. And then can I have you just say body sculpting? Because I might have to just like clip it in.
Body sculpting. Body sculpting.
Amazing. Thank you
and
so
if you want,
much.
If you want me to re-record anything, I can put this t-shirt back on and do it. It's no problem.
Fab. Yeah, no, I'll let you know. I'm going to edit it tonight. It's going to be released on Wednesday, so we'll be good. All right, I'm just going to quickly stop the recording and...